Everyone knows the apron is the hardest part of the ring, but this is the nerdiest part of the ring. Your weekly news roundup for the wide world of professional wrestling. I am your host. I am the five-star man, Asa Gray. And joining me at this time is the Big D, Dalton Anthony.
Yo.
Dalton.
Yo.
Fun episode tonight. I'm not going to ask you how you're doing. I know how you're doing. We've been on the call for an hour already.
No, 40 minutes. Calm down. 50 minutes. Shit.
You don't know math. That's funny. Anyway. Don't know math. Basic math.
I was just rounding.
You weren't rounding. You were just dumb. Dalton, how do we start every episode after I just called you dumb and told you you couldn't do math?
Well, we all know that the internet is a giant toxic place, so we try to spread some light with our power of positivity. And since you've been such a gracious role model for our listeners, Asa, why don't you go ahead and start us off this week?
The power of positivity, we start every episode with it because just no need to be so negative and toxic and abusive to each other online.
That was my favorite segue we've ever done. 2 years of the podcast, that's the best one.
It's probably not up there.
Not even fucking close.
And honestly, it does.
Andy's dying right now.
There's a theme because it kind of goes with my power of positivity. Because we are going to talk about AEW Revolution this past weekend. We are going to be talking about some of our favorite Sting memories and moments and matches. But my power of positivity this week does go to Dynamite. And it's the new Elite, essentially.
Yeah.
Of Okada making his debut and immediately aligning himself with the Young Bucks. When he laid out Kingston with the Rainmaker, I got like weirdly excited because that means we're going to get that match.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I need that real bad. Yeah, but also it is probably the most interesting thing they could have done with an Okada debut is immediately turn him heel. And the way that the EVPs, the Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, like those characters are such shit heels. And they play that role so well. I am stoked to see, you know, Okada come in and what he brings to the table there.
Yeah, it's one of those that, like, I don't think... It doesn't help that they put a little bit of on themselves. But, like, I don't think the Young Bucks truly get credit for, like, how creative they can be when just given full, like, reins to kind of pull something. Where they started this EVP thing, I was like, oh, okay. But then after, like, 2 weeks, I was like, hook, line, and sinker, fucking in. Like, I'm here for it. And then, yeah, I was on Fortnite with our friend Jason last night, and then Sadie's brother texted me and being like, because the joke he kept making was Okada was going to debut at NXT and be in Chase U. That was the thing that he would say to me all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I just can't wait to see Okada in Chase U. I got a text, he's not in Chase U, and I was like, it's Wednesday. Oh, shit. He's in like he showed up and then yeah you guys were texting about it in our group chat and I was like, he's heel with the Bucks, holy shit, that's a choice, a great one at that. Like, not even, that's not me saying it's a choice in a bad way, like that's pretty smart because like he's the Rainmaker, he's all about money. Well, now he's with the EVPs, who's gonna get the money? The top, baby. It's really fun. Also, seeing Okada work heel like is gonna be really fun because also.
I've ever seen him work heel.
New Japan is very weird. We're like, you may not have, but like during his like series of matches with Omega, whenever Omega finally, like over that like fucking 2 year long story they told, there were times in the match where they were both simultaneously, it was Schrodinger's heel. They were both a heel and not a heel at the same time. And that goes for both of them, where it's just like, this is very weird. It's going to be great. I'm really hoping that they do something meaningful with Okada and make it a prolonged meaning. Because that's kind of our thing with AEW, where they sign this big person and they will be a thing for like 5 months and then they're going to be in the Bang Bang Scissor Gang, which is great, but like, Jay White was like, he was the man in New Japan and that's kind of what they did with him, whereas like, Okada is one of the biggest names in Japanese wrestling history, but he hasn't been the guy for a couple of years. Like, he's still Okada, but he's not been like 2018 to 2022 Okada. where he was just running that shit.
To give him the benefit of the doubt, or maybe to, I think that's going to be a different circumstance, because, like, as big of a fan of Jay White as I am, he's not Okada.
No.
You know who is Okada?
Okada?
Yeah, and he's the one. Like, that's the end of list. So I feel like, plus he is longtime friends with the Bucks.
Yeah, there has to be a lot of trust in that contract. Well, a lot of trust and a lot of money.
And apparently just an absolutely mouth-watering amount of money.
Yeah.
Like $4 million a year amount of money.
Because, like, go back to, like, even watching Dynamite, Swerve had that promo, and you forget. He was talking to Shivani. He was like, 2 years ago, you handed me my contract. And I was like, holy, it's taken us 2 years to get here?
Mm-hmm.
And granted, yeah, it also takes them 2 years to get their figures out, but, like, this is week-to-week storytelling. We just now have Swerve at, like, the top of the pyramid? And they made it a point at a pay-per-view. He was the NXT, like, that was the equivalent of who's sitting ringside at NXT at TakeOver. And that person usually was always, like, going top billing soon. It took Swerve 2 years. And, like, yes, Swerve and Okada are two different, like, beasts. Like,
yeah.
No one's making Okada money right now. The only person I think was maybe making Okada money was Lesnar. Like, I'm talking about all of wrestling. I don't think anybody's making Okada money. 4.3 in a year?
Yeah, that's... you gotta think Punk was up there.
Okay, maybe Punk. Punk might have been.
I genuinely don't know what he was making or what he's making in WWE now, but... I think it's the most interesting thing you could do with him. Because you could easily coast on, okay, we have Okada. Do you want to see Okada wrestle Bryan Danielson again?
Yeah, you do.
Do you want to see Okada wrestle Will Ospreay under the AEW banner? Yeah, you do. Do you want to see Okada wrestle just, like, they could just have him do, Tyler was like, I want to see him versus Copeland. Yeah, you do. These are all, like... And you could just not even really do story stuff with it. It could just be like, here is a marquee guy who is going to put on an instant classic match every single time that he steps foot in the ring. And they could treat him like a special attraction. But instead, to give him something character-driven to kind of sink his teeth into is immediately more interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because we're still going to get those matches, but now there might be something, you know, a little bit extra behind him. I do hope it doesn't turn into just like, okay, Okada versus Moxley, but the Young Bucks get involved and it causes kind of a fuck finish.
Oh god, what if they become the Bloodline but just an AEW?
And then we get like, it's essentially that. But now granted, go back to our preview of Revolution and how many times I was like, man, this match could be really good, but I just feel like the United King or the Undisputed Kingdom are going to get involved and it's going to be screwy, or the Don Callis family is going to get involved and that's going to get screwy. And it really didn't happen.
No, just the one time it needed to happen, which was a Christian thing, but that's his character.
Right. So I'm not prejudging. Like I said, this is the Power of Positivity segment for me. I'm very excited for it. I think it is going to be very, very cool. So yeah. I'm excited to see if Kingston, like, does he get back up? Does Okada immediately go for the Triple Crown? Like, or is he just go up maybe after the New Japan Strong title or the ROH title? Or, you know, it'll be cool.
Oh, God. Okay.
It'll be supremely funny if the first title that Okada wins in AEW is one of the New Japan titles.
That would be very great. But the thought part, like, the aspect that we might be getting, like, the New Elite, or whatever the fuck they'll call themselves, versus Eddie Kingston, Moxley, and Danielson. That would be fucking fun.
Danielson did do that promo where he talked about how much he actually, like, was wrong about Eddie and how much he liked him and respected him.
That's why I'm saying it, Asa. There's a reason. Mm. I'm not just talking out of my ass for no reason. I know you're used to me doing that, but there was a thought process there, because I could have said Claudio. That's not happening.
I do. That would be fun. I do kind of hope that they call, if they do rebrand the stable, the Elite. Elite Plus. Just something obnoxious and corporate like that. Yeah. That'd be stupid. Dalton, what's your power positivity for the week?
I'm going with Ian Riccaboni on Twitter, because there's so much Sting love going on, which we're going to talk about this week. But I think out of all of my... There's two great Twitter interactions. Or one was maybe Instagram. Oh, no, it was Twitter. But so, like, honorable mention is Steven Borden, which is Sting's youngest son, I think. He's the one that was the Wolfpack one. Him tweeting the picture of him just fucking murdering the Bucks with some splashes with the caption, "Don't shame your dad, don't shame your dad, don't shame your dad jumps." Mm-hmm. And it's like, that guy got, like, again, I made the joke to you. I was like, that motherfucker got, someone said a crossword to him in the back. And he was like, I'ma get him.
I'm sorry, did you miss the episode of television where they bloodied him and then continued to wear his blood-soaked suits?
Yeah, but on television? Like... But
he was getting his back.
He's a professional.
And proving that people can fly, apparently.
Yeah, I've never seen a person go horizontal on a splash before. And I got scared every time he did it. Because I don't know what you're supposed to do in that situation. Because I go vertical on mine. I've never gone sideways. But Ian Riccaboni's my actual power positivity. He had a really touching tweet out to Garrett Borden, which is the one that came out as Surfer Sting. Mm-hmm. And said, "Hi, Garrett, I worked with your dad in AEW. In 1994, I think I accidentally knocked you over in the Disney MGA Studios line at Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I cried more than you did. Your dad cheered us both up. Great job on Sunday. Please don't ever seek revenge on me. 30 years, sincerely, Ian." And it was a picture of Garrett Borden as his dad. And, like, dude is in pretty great shape.
Well, they're both college athletes. Like,
yeah, they were both athletes. Yeah.
Not currently, but...
Yeah, Garrett Borden then tweeted back, "This is awesome. I actually remember I got in trouble for pulling Goofy's tail, so I probably deserve to be knocked over." And it's just one of those, and then, like, Ian responded to being like, "I was mortified when I found out who your dad was. But, like, he made everything cool. Like, it was an awesome experience." And he's like, "You ruled on Sunday. I'm super happy you got that moment." And it's just one of those things where it's like, this exchange is exactly what power positivity is meant to be. My runner-up was gonna be Mike and Maria Kanellis Mike Bennett and Maria Kanellis getting horny on the main line, because that's always great. But this is more important. Like, if it would have been a slow news week, the shaving of the mustache and all that bullshit would have definitely been my power positivity. But this interaction between Riccaboni and Sting's son is exactly what we made this segment for, of just like, what made you happy in the world of wrestling? And like, we're going to talk about it, and I'm going to get to say my piece about a couple of things, but, like, this moment right here is just prime wholesomeness.
Mm-hmm.
It made me super happy, because it's one of those, like, Garrett just seems, like, super happy that he was able to share, to get a little bit of the light with his dad, and Ian Riccaboni just, again, being just a national treasure. That one made me happy. I saw that one and immediately, like, sent you screenshots, and I was like, this is my power of positivity. And then some extra shit happened that was funnier. But, mm-hmm. like, maybe if they pull some more shit next week, the Bennetts will be my power positivity.
I mean, they're pretty consistently, like, thirsting after each other, which is just, you'll love to see it.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, and I'll talk about Mike Bennett and Maria Kanellis for a second. I've been on shows with them, you have too.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they are adorable together. Like, even, like, talking, like, they're just, like, those two people are just, that's what, like, you want your relationship to be. Those right. two motherfuckers are just, those two love each other.
That's
and
one of those,
don't
like...
fucking say it. Don't say it. Don't fucking bring that song into it. But it is the, like, one of the most wholesome things I've ever seen was those two interacting with each other.
It's the greatest. It's the greatest.
You're a bitch.
It's
you're
the
a
greatest
bitch.
Love.
I
the,
hate you.
What I was actually going to say before you just assumed the worst of me, even like I've given you any reason to think that I would be rude to you.
Minutes. All right, listen.
What I was going to say. I have editing power over this podcast. I could just cut out all of your audio. What I was going to say is they are like when you're a little kid and you have this idea of like what marriage is supposed to be, it's that, like, that's what you think of. I was going to say, like, when you're a kid and you look at your parents and then it's like you and me and it's just like that's a bad example.
I was about to say, I was like,
neither of us really had that experience. I mean, so anyway.
I couldn't say my parents' love was the greatest. Nope, too dark of a joke for this show. Keep going.
That's fine. Moving on. Hey, if there was something in wrestling that made you happy this week, let the person know who did it, because you might end up making their day. But AEW Revolution was this weekend, and just like, fuck, dude. Like,
it was so good.
What a show.
Yeah.
What a fucking show. It was awesome. The 0 hour stuff wasn't phenomenal. Max Caster flubbing the live rap freestyle on the entrance.
I don't know how long he's going to be running that, because like, he's been doing it for a while. Like, it's happened a couple shows.
So has he done it live though? Because like, we've seen it taped. Like, we've seen. I know I've seen him on like the taped.
He did it. He did it like a week ago.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, like where he's in the middle of it and he just stops, like gets frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And it started since the Bang Bang Scissor Game started being a thing.
So maybe it's a story. Like, maybe.
Oh, it's a 100% a story.
Oh, is it? Well, fuck.
It has to be. Yeah.
I just haven't been paying attention then, but like, oh, it'd be funny if it's.
This is your Paul Heyman's in the Hall of Fame question mark.
Apparently, that's like news, not a story thing. But like, the match was fun itself.
Mm-hmm.
I do kind of like, if you're gonna have all these championships, and then you decide to take your two trios champion teams and mash them together to be a six man, like, you could have, you know, challengers and have the ROH ones show up on ROH.
Nah.
No. But I mean, I do like the concept of the Bang Bang Scissor Gang, though. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale defeated Julia Hart and Sky Blue. Another one, there was a couple rough spots, but nothing.
Yeah.
Truly awful.
It got. The last couple of 0 hour Willow Nightingale matches have gotten kind of rough at the end of the match, which is a shame because they start so strong. Like, Sadie and I were watching, well, like, the whole house is watching it. And, like, in the middle of it, they were talking, and Sadie was like, this has been a really good fucking match. And I was like, yeah, it has. And then it started falling off the rails a little bit. And I was like, ah, that sucks, because it was going so well.
Yeah.
To see, like, little, like, botches happen, it looked like people getting hurt and shit. It's just, like, it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good match.
I love the Stokely Willow Statlander dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of fun to me, because Stokely is just, fucking love that man. The main card itself, though, the show started with the AEW TNT Championship on the line as Christian Cage defeated Daniel Garcia. Part of this match kind of confused me a little bit, and, like, I'm willing to admit it was just something that I didn't necessarily follow. But it was, so Christian, like, he early in the match, relatively, faked the ankle injury. Like, he faked that his ankle was hurt. He stepped on it wrong and then went down and then, oh no, that rapscallion, he pulled one over on us. But then, like, as the match progressed, like, he was actually selling it. And I don't know if I missed when Garcia went after it or if he did land weird on something and, you know, but it played into the finish. It was just kind of odd to me.
Yeah.
But like you said, this was the only time really in the show that outside interference directly interfered into something.
Yeah, we had a lot of fckery in this match, which it's Christian. And
it's
you
the
have
patriarchy.
The,
yeah.
Yeah, you have his whole stable. Like, that's expected to happen.
You did have the kill shot,
choke slam,
kill switch, choke slam, with the Garcia kick out. Well, what did Cage hit? He didn't hit the Unprettier right after it.
Yeah, he did.
Was that it? And then he I couldn't remember if it was the spear or the Unprettier.
Yeah, no, because he hit the choke slam. I think Garcia kicked out, and then Christian hit the Unprettier.
Okay, but the pile driver near fall that Garcia got is probably one of the best near falls I have ever seen in a match.
It's almost like Christian is real fucking good at this wrestling thing.
Yeah. I mean, we know this, and we also know that Daniel Garcia is really good, and just the story arc that he's had since the Continental Classic started has been awesome. I did really like Daddy Magic coming out and going after Killswitch.
Yeah.
In the middle of the match, like, I like their relationship. between Garcia and Magic. Go back and you're not winning the JAS anymore. And Matt Hardy's contract's coming up, apparently. We can go back to you guys being Matt and Jeff. It's cool.
Yeah, I was about to say, we can't have the JAS anymore because now he's saving his buddy Hook. You know that long running friendship of Hook and Jericho.
I don't want it. That wasn't on this show. That's fine. this match ruled. Christian Cage retained after Nick Wayne caught Garcia, and then Christian hit Garcia with Dan Prettier again? Spear. What did he hit him with?
Fuck, I thought he hit the... I have to rewatch the match. I thought it was kill switch, and then I'm prettier. I thought that was the end. I could very well be mistaken, though. It's been 4 days.
I think it was kill switch hit the choke slam,
then a near fall,
and then Cage hit the frog splash.
Oh, okay.
Cage hit the frog splash. Garcia kicked out. That was that near fall, and then that's end when Magic was,
came out.
The end was Nick Wayne. Doing his mom distracted the referee. Nick hit Garcia, and then Cage did win with the kill switch off of the interference. My brain was like, I don't he didn't lose off of the choke slam. He like kicked out of another big move. It wasn't a finisher. It's just Christian is, I think, won with that splash before. Anyway, great match, great way to start the show, like high energy, and like you said, Christian Cage just having an all-time run, just unreal. The next match was the Continental Crown Championship, the Continental Championship, the ROH World Championship, and the New Japan Strong Openweight Championship. Eddie Kingston defeated Bryan Danielson. I know we're looking at this show like that has multiple match of the year contenders in it.
This match is so good.
I think this is my match of the night.
Really? I mean, it's not a bad choice.
Because the only thing that would have made it better is if we would have gotten Moxley on commentary.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that would have made it better, because the first time that they wrestled and Moxley's on commentary and they're talking about like Danielson doesn't respect Kingston, so he's going to prove that he's better at Kingston than the thing Kingston is best at, which is the striking game. And ultimately, that's what led to him losing in that first match. Yeah. But then Danielson's like, no, I'm still a better wrestler than you. So I tried to outdo you at your thing. That was a bad move. But if we were to wrestle again, I could beat you because I'm better than you. And they told that story of just like, you see Danielson constantly trying to, trying to get holds then, but also just like, you can tell he's getting frustrated. So then he does start doing more of the strikes with Kingston and then Kingston's like, oh, hey, remember, I can throw people too. So like, there was some badass suplexes. This match ruled. Like,
it's exactly... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Because otherwise I'm just going to keep gushing.
Yeah, no, it was exactly what I expected, which I was expecting a great fucking match. Because, like, talk about people being on all-time runs. Like, Kingston is wrestling like a man that is trying to just wear his body out. And he's somehow not doing it, knock on wood. But, like, dude is having just match of the night contenders every fucking pay-per-view. It's mm-hmm. almost like the second they took him off 0 hour, he was like, all right, now I'm going to prove why that was a bad idea. Like, he's killing it. Like, his match with Moxley last year was one of my favorites. Like, right at World's End, like, literally the last show of the year. Like, yeah. That match between him and Moxley was one of my favorites. I fucking loved this match. I don't know if it's my favorite of the night, but it's, like, if you put it up for match of the year, I'd be like, yeah, no, it makes sense. Like, that match ruled. It's a lot like the Moxley match where it's just they're so good at highlighting the strengths of both wrestlers and telling a story based off those strengths that works within each other. Like, it's like, this is going to sound lame as fuck. It's beautiful the way that Kingston has been putting these matches and stringing them together the way he has. Like, he's telling such a sweet, cool, like, story from the oh God, was it just the Continental Classic was the name of the tournament?
Yeah.
From then until now, he's told just such a cool through line story for what, 5 months, 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's real fucking neat. If you like long-term storytelling in wrestling, that isn't like just like these two people don't like each other. Like, if you just want a through line, watch all the Continental Classic Eddie Kingston was in, and then watch all of his defenses.
Mm-hmm.
And the evolution of it is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, this is, this will go down, like, because I have, like, eras of wrestling and, like, runs of wrestling where it's, like, Ring of Honor Punk, U.S. title Cena. Mm-hmm. This Continental Classic Kingston's going to be up there whenever it's all said and done.
Yeah. 100%. Like, I'm... So, this match was for the Continental Crown, which was all three. I still don't think we know, really, like... Are they going to do, you know, is he going to defend the ROH world title, you know, but only the ROH title?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to defend the Continental Championship, you know, individually? It's still not 100%. I don't know if they've really made that clear, or maybe I'm just not paying enough attention. But I just, this was awesome. Danielson, like, showing that reluctance to shake his hand and then kind of fucking with him a little.
Mm-hmm.
At the end too, just like no, okay, I'll do it. Like I said I would, and now here I am. And then we kind of touched on that promo after the fact of Kingston like thanking Danielson for letting him prove that he's worthy of the respect and that he is as good as people say he could be. And then Danielson just being like, yeah, no, that was a lot of fun getting my ass kicked. Like, I like that guy. Which I know there's some people that are going to hate that because it, you know, undermines the story, blah, blah, blah. But, like, no, I like that. I dig that he is just like, yeah, I didn't like this dude, but he kind of proved me wrong, so.
Yeah, it's.
This new data has made me change my mind.
I feel like, no, it's not this kind of show. Not every wrestling story has to be cookie cutter and give the same response. Sometimes, like, no, he beat the shit out of me so much that I'm like, no, I get it. Like, I get the hype now. Eddie Kingston's legit. And that's, like, sometimes that's all you need to get somebody. Like, Kingston's already over as fuck, but something like that gets him over a lot more. And you didn't, like, you didn't, nobody lost value in that match. Like, Brian, or Danielson doesn't look bad because he lost to Kingston.
No, not at all.
Like, that's, it's perfect storytelling, in my opinion.
They're treating Danielson very well in this, too, because, like, it's not a secret that we're in his last full year. Like, he's finishing up in 24 as a full-time wrestler.
Yeah.
Like, he'll have other matches, but it won't be, they'll be much more sporadic. And they're doing such a good job with this run because he's not necessarily beating everyone. You know, he is taking losses to people like Zack Sabre Jr. and Eddie Kingston now. But, like, so, like, with Jericho, he gets credit for coming in and putting over younger guys. As he should, because it's not always a guarantee. But it does, when he does that run of just like, oh, people are beating Jericho, which it was more in WWE than in AEW.
Yeah.
But like, it is very much just, okay, now it's this person's turn to beat Jericho.
Yeah, it's the Fozzie, like, breaks in the Fozzie tour. Hey, yeah. can you come work a thing with Bray? Well, you'll beat him one time, but he'll beat you three, and then you'll fuck off for 4 months.
Yeah, and then come back and lose to whoever again.
Yeah.
You know, AJ or whoever. This Danielson run, it feels like the wins are there. If you're beating Danielson, it still feels like a big deal, which, to be fair, even the Jericho stuff, like, that's a feather that you could put on their cap, but they feel earned too.
Yeah.
Like it's, there's story behind it. There is, and there's, you know, truly, it feels like there is momentum to be gained by beating Danielson. And Danielson still being recognized as, you know, one of the best on the planet. So this ruled. The All-Star Scramble match, winner receiving a future AEW World Championship match. We now know that will be this coming Wednesday. Wardlow defeated Chris Jericho, Powerhouse Hobbs, Lance Archer, Magnus Hook, Brian Cage, and Dante Martin to win the championship match. He will take on Samoa Joe, spoiler alert, on Wednesday the 13th. This was fine. This was one of the lower points on the show. Like, it was by no means bad, but like, there were the fun moments of the four big guys, Hobbs, Wardlow, Cage and Archer doing the run meat. The ropes, run into each other, meet shit. Once they got fucked off out of the ring, the smaller guys kind of did the same thing.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny. Like, that got me. Nothing particularly, like, to me at least, like, crazy exciting happening in it, other than Wardlow pinning Dante to get the win.
Yeah, it's one of those that I don't have a, like, there's it's not what a ton. It is. Yeah, it was a big scramble match, guys. Sorry. Yep. Like, yeah.
Let's get y'all on the show.
Yeah.
The International Championship, Orange Cassidy defending against Roderick Strong, but ultimately Roderick Strong pins and defeats Orange Cassidy and is the new International Champion. This match also fucking ruled. So it was another good one that I was like, okay, you know, we're going to see Adam Cole. We're going to see, not necessarily like we're going to see Taven and Bennett come out, and there's going to be all this interference, and Orange told the best friends did not come to ringside. So
there's going to be some buddies getting hurt.
Yeah. Which I like that angle. I like that idea. They've done so much dissension over the last, like, what feels like 6 years. Like, so is Trent going to turn, or is he just kind of like, do they randomly decide, like, oh yeah, we want to progress that idea of, like, Trent is growing frustrated, and then they just kind of drop it? Because he was showed annoyance at the pay-per-view when Orange Cassidy said that.
Yeah, because like, Chuck had to be like, I'll make sure that we stay back.
Yeah. Because they were like, that seems dumb. Like, they're not going to respect that. But then, it turned out to not really be a thing until after the match, but more on that here in a second. I did very much hate the, I don't even remember, like, what exactly it was. It was, like, a gut-wrench avalanche, like, pump handle slam type thing. But instead of, like, going to the mat, he just drops Orange across the top turnbuckle back first. That was yucky. Which, again, I'm not a wrestler. I'm sure it was fine, but, like...
Yeah, like, so I... All right, so let me preface it with saying, I don't want to take that bump. But if Roderick Strong was like, hey, you're taking that bump, I would look at it and be like, yeah, I can do that. It's one of those that, like, it looked a lot worse than it was.
And I'm sure that's, like, what a lot of their stuff is, but...
Yeah, like, it... I'm grateful that they showed it multiple times, because I was, like, looking at it and I was like, how do you do that? And I looked and I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, it was one of those, like, it looks way gross than it is. Now, like, again, if that gets pitched to me at fucking CCW, I'm going to be like, nah. I'm going to be Big E talking about Goldberg. Bump that, no. Like, you're going to shoulder tackle me.
Yeah.
But, like, and Orange is used to taking bumps like that. Like, kind of more like... higher risk bumps, but, like, at the end of the day, they're still pretty controlled. That's what I kind of would explain that, like, the off the rope thing.
Yeah.
Because also, like, I forget what Colt Cabana used to call it, but he did a similar thing. He still kind of does when he wrestles, but, like, he'll have him up, like, in the fireman's carry on, like, the top or second rope, mm-hmm. and he'll drop them, like, he'll drop out from underneath them, so they just eat the ropes.
Yeah.
Like, it's
I know what you're talking about. I've seen that.
It's not super common, but it's not uncommon to see it. It's just weird that he only hit one rope, and that's why it looked gross. Because, like, yeah, you hit one rope, you're going one way or the other.
Yeah.
And the fact that he went the correct way tells me that he either is super lucky, mm-hmm. or he knew it, like, he knew where he was going.
Or it was two highly talented, highly skilled professionals performing a wrestling move.
Yeah, that's also a possibility, believe it or not. super fucking happy that Roddy has this belt, by the way.
100%. And, like, them talking about it being the workhorse championship, yeah. That's why he wants it. Like, oh, I like when there is motivation to, like, no, this is what this title means, and this is what this title means to me, so I want it now.
Because remember what Nigel used to put over about Roddy Strong all the time on NXT? Dude's got cardio for days. That's all fucking Nigel used to talk about, was mm-hmm. just the conditioning of Roderick Strong. So, like, Orange Cassidy and his international title reigns, like, something to behold. I am super thrilled that Roddy was the one that took it off of him, because it feels like it's somebody that, A, can make the title still relevant,
mm-hmm.
and B, kind of like he has the potential to live up to what Orange did. Now, yeah. Is he going to have Orange Cassidy matches? No, because he has the United Kingdom. And the more I see Mike Bennett on my TV, the happier I am. Like, I'm okay with some fuckery for a while with this belt, like, match-wise. Like, I'm cool with, like, heel group for a while, but, like, also Roddy can go.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it was awesome. I also really liked the finish of him, like, countering the Orange Punch with a jumping knee. Like,
mm-hmm.
That was a good jump into the end of Heartbreak, and then clean. As a whistle. Also, nice touch that Cassidy pulled out the Panama Sunrise.
Yeah.
Using one Adam Cole's moves on Roderick. Love
that. I love that the doctor said, if he doesn't tape his back, I'm not going to let him compete. And yeah, he came out looking like he had a KT tape rib cage. You like
saying, oh, it's 2024 DDP.
Yeah. I forgot I said that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good line. You popped more at it than I did when I first read it just now, and you're the one that said it.
That's I forgot sad. That I had said it.
And then after the match, they continued to kind of fuck with Cassidy until Kyle O'Reilly came out. He made his return to AEW since, like...
He's been out for 2 years.
Has it been 2 years? I was going to mm-hmm. say, I don't know if it's been close to 2 years, if it hasn't been a full 2 years. But... after the neck issues, he has returned. United Kingdom's like, wait, what the fuck? And then Roderick's like, no, cool. It's cool. He's my friend. So they hand him the United Kingdom shirt. He hands it back, whispers something to him, and then leaves. So I'm excited to see where that goes. And also, like you said with Bennett, the more Kyle O'Reilly that I see on my screen, the happier I'm going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, the Blackpool Combat Club, John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli facing FTR, Dax Harwood, and Cash Wheeler. Tag team matchup, two teams that are like, fuck you, we're better. And like the other one's like, fuck you, we're better. Yeah. And then they just fought for 20 minutes. Blackpool Combat Club did defeat FTR. And now that we know, again, spoilers for the tag team match, but like now that we know that the tag titles have been vacated and they're going to do a tournament, this is the finals, right?
Has to be.
Like, this is going to be the finals again. I'm fine, which, again, totally fine with it.
Yeah, like, if that's what they're going to give us, let us, like, I can watch this match again. I did love, we talked about it last week, of like, who knows more random 80s tag team wrestlings? They come out as the Road Warriors.
Yeah,
Blackpool does. I thought that was fantastic.
It's a truly missed opportunity, because it would have been one of the funniest things in the world if so Blackpool Combat Club makes their entrance wearing the Roadrunner. They got the Roadrunners, the Road Warrior shoulder pads.
Yeah, spikes. Yeah, yeah.
To have FTR come out then with the spikes and the shoulder pad, like their own like Road Warrior yeah. shoulder pads, just be like, hey, no, this was our idea. We came up with it first.
No, you're an asshole.
Something we didn't touch on yet, but, like, Garcia wearing the...
Sting jacket.
The Sting jacket with the scorpions. Magnus in the Scramble match, like, had a Sting mask on his mask.
Yeah.
Like, the Sting mask logo on his mask. I was genuinely surprised that none of these four came out in the Surfer Sting face paint. Or yeah. any kind of, like, homage to Sting. Unless it was something incredibly subtle that I missed.
No, like, I mean,
Blackpool came out in full on Road Warrior cosplay minus the face paint, but
which would have been dope.
Yeah. This match ruled.
It was so good.
And it's because they are so very good, but you're not going to convince me that Claudio and Dax didn't legit just kind of be like, all right, fuck this dude to each other.
Yeah. On the fucking reversal of the. Oh, God.
It was the strike exchange.
Oh, yeah,
just, like, true. Claudio just kind of being like, no, come on, hit me. And it's, like, slaps him in the face. And it's like, I don't know if that was a miscommunication or just, like, these motherfuckers are getting annoyed at each other. But some of this doesn't seem entirely comfortable to watch. Like, I feel like I'm seeing something that I shouldn't be seeing.
Go back to fake hitting each other, please.
Yeah. No, this match ruled. There was kind of the... a lot of both FTR and Blackpool Combat Club, pretty much all of the members are guilty of this, of having that, oh, you kicked out of that moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of just like, oh, that wasn't it. Okay. That's all right. You know, but no, I fucking loved it. Moxley busted out a cutter. Made me mm-hmm. excited. I don't know why. Just.
And it wasn't cool. And it wasn't on his forehead for once.
Yeah. But yeah, that match ruled.
I will say, so we messaged each other and I didn't like, I missed whenever what caused Dax to bleed. So mm-hmm. I just assume it, but like he got busted open somehow. And I just texted you like, what busted open Dax? And you, without missing a beat, probably that blade in his wrist tape. And that got me. That
just
was
a
my
smart ass answer.
Yeah, it was so good. I was like, all right, fucker, what caused him to pull the blade out, you dick?
Well, and it was weird because like I was pretty sure that they did the shoulder turnbuckle spot.
Yeah.
And it was, which after is that also is why when he started to bleed, and I was like, well, that's okay.
Which is also why I just assumed that maybe he got busted, like he caught something, it. Like he yeah. got hardwayed, yeah.
And he may have, I don't know, maybe, and I was just making, you know, like I said, a shitty joke. I will say, someone on Twitter, and I wish I could remember who, said that Dax intentionally started to bleed because he knew it would get under Moxley's skin, knowing that someone bled before him in a match.
And then he just couldn't do it.
And it would throw off his game. Yeah. but the Blackpool Combat Club won by technical submission because Harwood passed out of the submission hold, which is a thing that I kind of feel like AEW does a lot when they don't want people to tap.
Yeah.
Like you see a lot of go to sleep outs. Submissions instead of tap outs, which like I get, you want to make the people look stronger, but like it doesn't work as much when people just sort of, you know, when it happens once a year. Yeah, hell yeah. Stone Cold did not tap out to Bret Hart, and that was yeah. awesome. But then like when it happens the next pay-per-view too, it's just like, okay, well,
I have a very thing, yeah, I have again, a very hate relationship with that, and you know why.
Yeah. And then Eddie Kingston being like, no, he didn't beat me, I never tapped out, I never quit. Motherfucker, you passed out. That annoyed me when he was the heel feuding with Moxley a couple years ago.
But that at least makes sense, and you can turn that into something.
It like, doesn't is make it... sense at all. It is good heel. It's terrible logic, but it's good heel logic because it's yeah. a lie, and heel. It's okay for heels to lie, but I just yeah. I don't like it. The AEW Women's Championship was next. Timeless Toni Storm defended the championship against Deonna Purrazzo. I loved Mariah May coming out as old school Toni Storm.
Yeah, hook, line, and sinker for a second. I was like, holy shit. No, wait a minute. She has a blonde valet.
That was fun. Again, this was a very, very fun match. I don't understand how Storm does not kill people with her hip attack. Because like every time she hits it, it just looks like it's lethal.
Yeah.
Also, Purrazzo, I very much did not expect Purrazzo to win this, but she did a good job of, like, there being the moments of, oh, wait, they might do something cool here. Also, she did get the visual pin submission, but yeah. then the referee had his back turned dealing with
May.
Luther on the outside.
Oh, yeah, it was Luther, yeah.
Because it was Luther and then May hit her. Or no, May got on the apron. Purrazzo hit her and then turned around into Storm to hit her finish.
Yeah. Storm Zero?
Yeah. I think that's that's what it used to be called. I don't know if they still...
I think it's still called that.
I think it is too. It's just weird because like...
They didn't change her name. It's just... Yeah.
Yeah, but like when you have that kind of character reinvention, it makes sense to kind of rebrand other stuff to be more on theme, but like, I'm not mad at it. That's fine.
Yeah. And she's still calling out Wendy Richter at post-conference. Again.
She's going to fuck her up.
And anybody else that wants the title, they can fuck off. Mm-hmm. There's a ranking system and you bloody better use it. God, I wouldn't have thought her having a mental break because of the goddamn social outcasts, whatever the fuck they were called.
Social outcasts. Wasn't that Miz? Or no,
no, that was Bo Dallas and, like, Adam Rose.
Curtis Axel and Alex, yeah.
Yeah, Adam Rose. God, what were they called? Were they just the Outcasts?
They were just the Outcasts, yeah.
Whatever, I don't fucking remember. But, like, to think Too Sweet Brother. No, the fact that that's what caused this Timeless Toni Storm. It's my favorite little bit of wrestling nugget of just, like, what caused Timeless Toni Storm. Well, the Outcasts were feuding, and Toni just didn't know what to do with her brain. Mm-hmm. And so she just had a mental break into a million-dollar idea.
She lost the championship, and then her friends were kind of mean, so then she just snapped. Love it.
Oh, I just figured out what I was going to do with the misprinted acclaimed hat. That's awesome. Sorry.
You're good. Will Ospreay, in a battle of the Don Callis family, Will Ospreay defeated Konosuke Takeshita.
So this is my match of the night.
Understandably so. Like, yeah. I loved this fucking match. It was so good. Except for the, like, sheer drop brainbuster that was supposed to hit the turnbuckle and didn't, and it looked like he was about to die. Wasn't cool with that. And, like, see him showing his back at the presser, I was like, oh, fuck that.
Just...
That's awful.
His whole ass hurts.
Yeah.
I will never be a fan of the Japanese super finisher. Like, they're just so I'm gonna drop you on your neck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hate that, but, like, that was the only thing I didn't like. Everything else, like, was so fucking cool in this match.
Yeah. I like the, even in the presser, he mentioned, like, he was putting over Takeshita of just, like, how great he is and how tough he is, and he was like, yeah, I literally had to use one of the most dangerous moves in wrestling, the Tiger Driver 91, to put him away.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, I like the logic there. But yeah, this match was everything you would hoped it would be. There wasn't any Callis family bullshit, which surprised me and delighted me. We did get at the end Kyle Fletcher coming out, but that's just, you know, teeing up the match that they had this past Wednesday. Ospreay, you know, clearly is in just full on babyface mode, so that split is going to happen at some point. But if that just means we're revisiting any of these matches, or like him versus Hobbs, is going to be a ton of fun if we get that. Like, it's going to be a very much different Ospreay match that we're used to seeing, but, like, I look forward to seeing what that match is. But no, this match was crazy. It made both Ospreay, it was a phenomenal debut, like, in-ring debut as an AEW full-time star for Ospreay. It's, even though he lost, it made Takeshita, you know, it reminded the audience that, no, this dude is a generational, like, he is special. There is something special here. This match ruled. So good. Like, he kept trying to go for the hidden blade, but, like, couldn't do it until the end.
Yeah, they did. They told a really good story, and then also had just amazing athleticism to go along with it.
Yeah.
I'm super happy to have Ospreay regularly in the States on national television.
Yep.
Like, it's super cool. And you can say that about Takeshita. You can say that about fucking Okada coming through. Like, that's the one really good thing about the competitions that we have, like the wrestling competition we have now, is that we are getting all of these international talents because they have somewhere to go now.
Yeah, absolutely. The AEW World Championship, Dalton, I'm sorry, was defended as Samoa Joe did retain against Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland. Another match that was incredible. I love the story that they told here of just, like, Paige and Swerve. Yes, they absolutely hate each other. There was the one moment where they did, like, the double suplex or double superplex on Joe, and then just immediately went back after each other. Like, it wasn't a, hey, let's team up to take out the bigger threat. It was, well, we were just kind of here, you know, we just ended up in this place, so we may as well.
It was a happy coincidence. Now we're going to beat the shit out of each other again.
Yeah. Also, Joe just kind of, like, not settling for just letting them fight each other. Like, he went after both of them to, like, right at the start. I dug that.
Again, it's the whole thing of Samoa Joe is the one person that would definitely start a blood feud about whoever eliminated from the Royal Rumble. Of course, mm-hmm. Samoa Joe's pride would not let him just let these two beat the shit out of each other.
Hangman's lower third saying has completely lost it or something like that.
Yeah.
Made me real happy. Hangman attacking the referees. He pulled out the first just one.
Beating the shit out of him.
And then Bryce came out later, and then he beat the shit out of Bryce. And then he, like, could have beat Joe, but there wasn't a referee. And even Shivani was just like, you did this yourself. This is your fault.
Yeah, that's like, on you.
So I liked that a lot. So the finish was Joe was Paige tapping out to the Kikina Clutch. I don't like how the commentary was like, oh, but did Adam Page really need to tap out, or did he intentionally do it to just so Swerve wouldn't win it?
That's the dumbest logic ever.
I like that in theory. But if that was the story, they did a bad job of conveying that, because, like, no, Joe just straight up had him in the clutch. And Swerve really was... It's not like Swerve was about to make the save.
Yeah.
Like, if Hangman had, like, real... Like, if there was a moment of, like, Hangman seeing Swerve on his way and just being like, no. And then, like, gloating to Swerve of just, like, I told you, you would never get it. They could have done something there, but they didn't. So, like, them making that call is weird to me. You know, they could always revisit it, I guess. But in the moment, it didn't
work. It was a choice, yeah.
Yeah. But, fucking Strickland hit the spiral tap.
Yeah.
When was the last time we saw the spiral tap?
Again, I loved his knee pad. He had the crosshairs knee pad mm-hmm. for kill shot. I like shit like that.
Yeah.
It's just and that little call.
Oh, go ahead. I do like that Swerve confronted Joe on Wednesday, too, so maybe.
Yeah, well, apparently Hangman's, like, reportedly injured.
It was reported on Sunday or maybe Monday that like he was going to take time off after the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been known, but I haven't seen anything saying that he was injured. There was the thing like, so whenever he faked his injury at the end of the one Dynamite and people were like, oh, you know, the fans are saying he's legitimately hurt. But then he, you know, it was revealed that it was all a swerve. I haven't seen anything about him being actually injured since then, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not. It's just I haven't seen it. And then in the main event, Sting's retirement match, as Sting and Darby Allin defeated the EVPs, the Young Bucks, Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, to retain the AEW Tag Team Championships. It started with Sting getting the video package of him, the final showtime in the theater, looking back at a bunch of his old moments and photographs, the close up on his face, and then him saying it's showtime for the last time. Like, he was emotional, you could tell, and it was so good. His son's coming out dressed as different versions of Sting, including the very underrated. Okay, probably not, but, like, to me, personally, very underrated Wolfpack Sting, which I get they had to do just so people didn't, you know, could tell them apart, was the main reason. We had, was it Great American Bash or Bash at the Beach?
America Great American Sting. Bash.
Obviously, because he was the American mm-hmm. flag paint dumbass. Yeah. God, Dalton, duh. Great American Bash Sting, Wolfpack Sting, and then Sting coming out, like... And then, yeah, the sun, it's starting with just Sting fucking up the Young Bucks. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat coming out as guest timekeeper.
Yeah.
Like, that was neat. And then I was like, oh, who else are they going to get? And then there wasn't anybody else. I was like, yeah. All right, that's fine. Do we really need more? It'd be neat, but eh.
Yeah.
It starts with just Sting and Darby just fucking up the Bucks. Real good. And then they turn things around, and that's when things kind of fall apart for me, personally. I don't mind the table thing off of the stage, But the Darby ladder and glass and chairs was just like, I get it. You want to make dad proud. And so it was very much the, hey, look what I'm willing to do. And, you know, took him out of the match for the majority of it until the end. But I did not like, I don't like glass. I don't like deathmatch stuff. Like, so that was already kind of already not my scene. But yeah, it just, yeah. It felt very unnecessary and over the top. And
I was talking to Jason about it last night on Fortnite chat. And we were talking and I was like, I did not like this match. I liked the opening video package. I liked that his sons did that. I'm cool with his sons getting those stinger splashes in on the Bucks. Mm-hmm. Mainly because little dude was just, a little dude, he's older than me. Little Borden was just flying at him. It was a sight to behold. I wanted to be like, Sting, how come you ain't ever did it like that? It was the second that I was like, all right, man, when are the Bucks going to fuck up the Suns? Because, like, I kind of need them out of the way. Because, like, I just want the match to happen now. Because they do a lot of, like, they did a lot of smoke and mirrors in this match to kind of protect Sting. And, like, really, they were smart. They accentuated the high points and really hid what was going to hamper a 65-year-old man having a match like this, which is, we're not going to have him do a whole lot until he needs to do it. The second the Suns brought out all the ladders and the fucking tables and the glass, I was out. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm good. I don't personally like this kind of wrestling.
And that's not what you think of when you think of a Sting match.
That's why I told Jason. I was like, yes, we all know the hardcore icon Sting.
Which, like,
in fairness.
Yeah, no, in fairness, because I think you're going to, you may not agree with me, but I think you'll see it this way. Sting pre-2019, pre-2020.
Yeah.
Obviously not. Yeah, not a hardcore icon. You know, he feuded with Cactus Jack, I'm sure, at some point. And, like...
Shut the fuck up.
But look at his AEW run. His AEW run has been a lot more like, yeah, have 2.0 put me through a table. Well, Let's fight in an abandoned warehouse because we can do the cinematic style match. So yeah. he's gone, you know, jumped off of the stage, like, or off of the landing, whatever. So it made more. It's not like it made zero sense, but it isn't what I was hoping to necessarily see. Like a tables, sure, that's whatever. It was the glass is what really like I didn't like, and especially because it was kind of a bummer when he smacked the glass the first time with the bat, and then it didn't break. So he was just like when he swung it at Nicholas or Matt. And then he was just like, no, I want this to break. So he just hits it again.
Yeah. And then, like, yeah, we put a 65-year-old man through a plate of glass.
Mm-hmm. But like, then,
why?
When they tried to grab the tag title belt to hit him with, that's when Ricky Steamboat is like, hey, yeah, that's
this
too
is
much.
Too far.
That's way too far.
Why are we doing this? This man's a legend. Yeah.
I did appreciate the kick out at the one after the EVP trigger. I did appreciate, yes, I absolutely, the Bucks turned face when they double super kicked Ric Flair.
I was like, they should have followed through more.
They did.
I will say that's been my favorite thing about Sting's AEW run is just the gross underselling and no selling of shit. Because mm-hmm. then they at least paid it off where, yeah, they hit the fucking TK driver and won. I laughed so hard at it. But this was also after me being like, I do not like anything about this. Because yeah. Again, I think they went too far for no reason.
And that's, I get it, but I just, the glass, yes, 100%. The giant, and even remove the glass. If Darby didn't land on glass and chairs, even if it was just a table spot,
it would have been better.
I don't love that because it was on top of the ladder that was inside the ring to outside of the ring.
Yeah, it was a good like 25-foot drop.
Yeah, so
maybe not 25, probably 20, but like I'm splitting hairs with 5-foot difference. Right. But like it was it. The glass was wholeheartedly unnecessary. I don't like. I really, really hate the precedent that we are setting with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, we're gonna have dipshits on the indies try this shit now, and like
they can't afford that those kind of glass panes.
And that's the fucking problem. Because they're just going to get real glass at that point. Not that that wasn't real glass, but they're going to get, like, real dangerous glass. I'm not a fan of it. Again, I think it sets a gross precedent. But I'm not going to say that Sting's last match wasn't entertaining or wasn't a spectacle. It was, but it wasn't the spectacle that I wanted. But at the end of the day, Sting's last match was not made for me.
Yeah.
The person that match was made for, his name is in the fucking title of it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Sting wanted. If Sting didn't want glass, there wouldn't have been glass.
Yeah.
Or if someone would have pitched glass and Sting wouldn't have liked it, guess what wouldn't have happened? Glass. Yeah, so, at the end of the day, my opinion is very irrelevant. This was not a match that I enjoyed, but if everybody is able to walk out of it and be cool, good fucking job, Sting. It was a hell of a career.
Have you changed your mind at all on, do you think that was Sting's last match?
I hate wrestling. Because at the end of the day, I want it to be, and I think it is, but it will not shock me whenever he turns 70 and he's like, I got one more in me, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hope not. I really do.
Mm-hmm. But compare where you were last week when we previewed the match and where. Oh, we're no,
I'm in the, I'm in the same spot. I'm in the okay. same spot. The second you say this is my last match and you televise it,
mm-hmm.
or not televise it, you announce, hey, what's the selling point to the Revolution pay-per-view? Sting's last match. Oh, okay. Not even if Sting loses, he's going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Sting's last match. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure it is. And it, like, I hope it is. I don't know how you top it. Like.
Yeah, no. I do, like, I and, you know, cut to whenever, and I'm eating my words, but I do really think that this was.
I hope
this,
so.
This was it. And it was a very, very memorable and noteworthy and appropriate way to end such an iconic career.
Yeah.
You know, no pun intended with the icon. But, Dalton, I told you to bring some Sting memories to the show. And I've got a couple. But the first one is this, it came up in a group chat I think we were in, or maybe I saw it on Reddit. I don't, my brain doesn't work, but it was a picture. No, it was on Twitter. I saw it on Twitter. Oh, yeah. And it was a picture of, cause Ringside Collectibles did a, hey, what was your favorite Sting toy? And I remembered I didn't have a ton of WCW toys, but I did have the Wolfpack Sting with the baseball bat with the red and with the red, thigh pads, and I fucking love that thing because the trench coat that it came with was super cool. The only other WCW figures that I really remember having was the Kevin Nash that came with the referee as an mm-hmm. accessory because yeah. he was just a little guy. The other Sting figure that I had was another WCW one, and it wasn't until I was like, I couldn't find it. I was looking for a specific Sting figure online, and I couldn't find it, but then I did. It was white and black, and it came with a baseball bat, but it wasn't a baseball bat. It was a giant scorpion tail. And a Macho Man cutout.
Yeah, Toy Biz was wild.
Well, that's not what I meant to send you. I meant to send
you. Okay, I was like, what's that? That's not what I was wanting.
That was something different. Let me,
Let me do it. Outside of, so like, I can't, my favorite Sting toy as a kid came from the WCW Riders packs, which was, oh, by the way, we're just going to scrap wrestling with articulation this week. I'll give one more week. We're already at like an hour.
God damn it. I'm bad at hosting.
I know, right? I'm already saying we're already bad at it. We're at an hour, and we still got to talk about Sting. So, like, I will shelve it one more time. We will eventually talk about 2K24. It was, like, these motorcycle series they had, and it was, like, Nash, Hogan, Goldberg, and Sting. But, like, they were all fantasy gears. And the Sting was all black, except he had silver thigh pads, and like the chest piece was silver. It wasn't made to look like anything that it wasn't. He had a giant bike, and the I think it's called the sissy bar of the bike was a scorpion tail. It was super dope.
Sissy bar.
That is a motorcycle term, you fuck.
I know, it's just like...
The fact that I knew it and said it properly, is that what
threw
you
off? Not a thing that I've heard in since grade school, probably.
Like, my favorite action figure of Stings is probably either the Defining Moments that Mattel put out, the Crow Sting, or... Okay, yeah. Toy Biz was wild. I see it is the picture of the Power Slam with the bat as the scorpion tail. Mattel did two really great figures. One of the Defining Moments, I got that one in the Cash Stash from a couple years ago. Shout out Cashboard, no relation to Sting. Or maybe. Anyway, but that is very much like Starrcade 98 Sting of all black. Comes with the trench coat and the bat. I also got the Bash of the Beach Defining Moments Sting, which is, I like, you've heard me talk about just like missing pieces in my collection that I was never able to find. And up until 2019, I could not find that goddamn Defining Moments, which was crawling everywhere when I started collecting. And they did a Surfer Sting in like Elite 84 or something like that, which was another Surfer Sting. And I could, that thing was an expensive figure when it dropped. It was hard to find. You could not find it. Mm-hmm. And they made a couple of basics, but I went to, whenever I went to Chicago in 19 for Survivor Series, Major Pod, and War Games, Quake Collectibles had it like in their, like the back thing. And I gave them like 100 figures to trade in, and they gave me like $200 in credit. I was like, I want that fucking Sting. And Sadie was like, really? And I was like, I don't have Surfer Sting in my collection. I need it. So I was super happy to get that. AEW ones are, I don't like the AEW Sting figures. I just don't. They don't stand well. The body mold, you can't do anything with. I was hoping to be able to make like a TNA Sting out of it. And they like, AEW will do unique molds that will not port with anything else. And Sting is one of them. We are getting Singlet Sting in the Supreme series later this year. And it's going to be a Walmart exclusive. I will be buying that one, and I'm just going to hope that the shirt is not staining. Like, they keep the shirts off of them, so the body isn't stained. But, like, that Supreme will be the Sting figure that's in my collection. Right now, I have the Walmart exclusive Sting with the half Darby paint with the unmatched coat that came with his first figure. Because I loved the coat, and I liked the half Darby paint, because he's hanging out with Darby right now in my collection. But, yes, figure-wise, Sting is, like, probably one of the most, like, toyetic wrestlers of all time, which is funny because like outside of like Surfer and Crow, he didn't change his look up too terribly often enough to like, but like his look was so iconic that he was able to get figures made all the time. He has so many fucking TNA figures from Jax, it's not even funny. And
speaking of the TNA figures, my favorite figure of Sting
is it comes the Joker?
It comes in a three pack. It's with Samoa Joe, it's with Jeff Jarrett, and it's Sting. I sent it to you. I'm going to put it on our Instagram.
Oh, go. Oh, no. Those don't and
it's
count.
It's the Genesis 3-pack where both Samoa Joe and Sting have just the have abs that Tony Nese would be jealous of.
Yeah. So that was like, those were sold at like CVS. Those were CVS exclusive figures.
That is not true. There's no way that was just a CVS figure because I remember seeing it somewhere.
Okay, well the Genesis.
Or no, maybe
figures...
it wasn't that. Maybe it wasn't that one. It was that brand because I think they did a pack. With Samoa Joe or with a Kurt Angle too.
And maybe like this three pack wasn't, but like these figures right here that I'm looking at, they were like selling them at like only CVS or Walgreens or some shit like that.
Maybe Walgreens because I remember seeing it on the shelf like in person.
Yeah.
Like I distinctly remember coming across it and being like, Samoa Joe has never looked like that.
Yeah.
Sting hasn't looked like that. Ever, but maybe like since the 80s.
Yeah. But I'm talking about like Jax proper. Mm-hmm. Cause that is a Jax specific product, but like I'm talking about, cause like Jax had the WWE line and then whenever they went over to Mattel in like 09, 010, Jax got a TNA license. And so they were like, Jack's big thing back then was the classic superstars. That was like their popular line. Well, they just ended up doing that with TNA. So like, we got like an early Jeff Jarrett. We got, I think they might have done Bash the Beach Sting in that body mold too. But like Sting, they were pumping out deluxes for him and shit like that. I think they got Joker Sting figures out in that line too. Like, Sting has gotten so many dope ass toys over the years. Yeah,
I'm genuinely surprised, which granted, I really wasn't collecting anything when they came out, because I want to say it was like 2016, 2017 era. Mm-hmm. But the Ninja Turtles wrestlers crossover.
Oh, yeah. Because yeah. They did, because
there was a Raphael Sting.
Yeah. Which they were pretty much only doing Legends, and I think maybe Cena had one that was like a current guy. Well, no, Balor had one too. It was face paints and shit like that. But like, yeah, no, action figure wise, like Sting has some of the dopest looking toys of all time. Mm-hmm. I have three in my collection. I have the AEW Sting because it was AEW. I needed one of those. So I just kind of put pieces together for that I liked. And then I have the two defining moments they made of Sting, which was Bash the Beach and Crow. And yeah, if you go and look through like the history of WCW toys, that is crawling with Stings. I was telling you in the pre-show, like, I was not a WCW kid.
Yeah.
So like at the dollar store is where my mom could get cheap wrestling figures, and she got me a Sting toy. And again, WCW didn't exist to me. I was only like, the only wrestling that existed was WWF. So I was like, this is a knockoff. I told Kevin Nash that story in the car, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, seriously, kid? And I was like, I was five, dude. Like, yeah. I didn't know. Right. Like, I thought you were a knockoff toy, too. Like, because I told him, I was like, I didn't see you until, like, 02. Like, for real, I didn't watch you live until then.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, you'd have been 10. And I was like, yeah. But, like, Sting toys always rule. Because, again, I thought it was not a real wrestler until I got the PC version of WCW Nitro.
Yeah. And you were like, someone should do this. This looks
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, that's a person. yeah, no. Sting is... Again, I said it last week, and I maintain that he is in the top three of people that never got the WWF championship that's a wrestler.
Yeah.
And, like, at any one day, like, if it wasn't for the fact that I'm such a big Terry Funk fan, mm-hmm. he would be number one. Like, that's my number one with a bullet. Or, like, Funk is, but, like, number two is Sting. Yeah. Dusty's three, but it's Funk and Sting for sure.
We had this guy, if you weren't here last week, we had this conversation yeah. last week, so we're not getting into that. When I think of Sting, there are very specific moments that live in my head, and they're not matches, though. Mm-hmm. The first one being, it's funny because I just saw it came across, it was on my TikTok like a couple months ago, but it always makes me laugh, is the Sprite commercial. Where yeah. he's like, it's not Make-A-Wish. They very clearly don't say Make-A-Wish, but it's like the Dream Come True Foundation.
Yeah.
And I'm here to wrestle, and the parents like move the couch away and stuff.
And he beats the
shit
out of the kid.
Let me take a drink. And he takes his drink of Sprite, and then Sting just dog walks this child. Like, throws him into he breaks the, like, cupboard with all the plates and shit.
Yeah.
Slams him into the, it's so funny. Oh, it looks so real. him just beating the shit out of the child makes me laugh a lot. I'm reminded of that. I was also not a huge WCW fan growing up, but I definitely did watch it for the cruiserweights. Like, that first hour of WCW before Raw mm-hmm. came on, yeah. I would watch. So I knew Sting, I knew DDP, like Booker T, Harlem Heat, the NWO. Like, I was aware of like what was happening in WCW, but I wasn't like super in the weeds with it. But Sting was always the absolute coolest, because mm-hmm. like him up in the rafters, him coming down, just like, because it was very Crow Sting is my Sting. Like, that's what yeah. I knew. I was unaware of Surfer Sting until I was embarrassingly old, like college. I was like, hold up, that's really? The same Sting. Well, because, like, there was a little bit of a gap in my fandom, and then WCW shut down, and, like, all right, well,
yeah.
Sting didn't show up. So, like, yeah, I was completely blind to Surfer Sting.
I guess it doesn't, yeah, because, like, again, I didn't know WCW was real until, like, 2000.
Mm-hmm.
But you gotta remember, in 2000, I was 8.
Yeah.
So, like, and we didn't have the internet. Like, we had the internet, but it sucked.
Probably like, high school more than college, but yeah. I was completely unaware.
I had, shout out to Village Video again, Derek, if you've listened to this long, I got to say Village Video again. But like, they, right next to all their softcore porn, right underneath it was all the wrestling tapes. And like, I could only watch, it was so weird that they did that. Like, even in retrospect, that was a choice.
I don't think it was just that place, because I'm remembering.
No, FYE. It was also Hastings. Hastings had it too, because I thought it was funny as an adult. I thought it was funny.
And FYE, I remember being a kid and being like,
what's this?
Okay, I could look at all the wrestling, or I could get in trouble and turn around, because on this show
not at Village Video. It was, I could look at the wrestling, or I could tilt my head up a little bit, and it was right there. And I was 8, because you got to remember, this is to 2000, this was before all the child abductions. And by that, I mean there was child abductions happening, but like, we didn't know about them yet. And like, so mom just let me walk 2 blocks over to Village Video, and I would rent, and like, I've told you this story. I rented all the WWF ones so much to the point that I could tell you what happened in the matches almost verbatim. And I was like, well, let me watch WCW. At that point, I knew WCW was real. So, like, I had watched most of, like, 96, 97. And, like, I had it on VHS. Like, I owned the VHS of Batch the Beach 96 when Hogan turned. That was still Surfer Sting. So, like, I guess I had known, like, 8, 10 in that ballpark that was the same guy. Which, yeah. Again, for you would have been 13, 14.
Yeah.
Like, the age gap between us. So, like, that does make sense. It's just one of those, like, I forget our... Like, we're not super far off in age.
Yeah. But it's farther than either of us really remember.
And whenever you're a kid, it might as well have been miles apart.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it is weird that you didn't realize it was the same person.
I gotta give credit to Wolfpack Sting. Yeah. Because, like, seeing him in the red and black, and then that's when he was, like, talking again.
So much cooler.
Like, yeah. Because he didn't, you know, you gotta remember, that original Crow run, like, not even the year that he wasn't wrestling, the actual run, he really wasn't cutting promos.
Yeah.
He was just dropping down and beat motherfuckers up with a baseball bat. But then it's like, dope. Hearing him talk and be like, this dude's actually, like, super, like, he's just cool. Like, yeah. He's got the long hair, the red and black, it looks awesome, because I loved Kane, so, like, that's why.
Yeah, so I love going back and watching Surfer Sting era. Like, there is a lot of fun shit, and that's, like, the one memory. Because, again, I watched a bunch of WCW from Village Video, and, like, yes, I knew the Three Faces of Foley. I didn't realize that Cactus Jack was a WCW thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Foley did a really sweet tribute to him on Instagram, but, like, Sting kind of really made Cactus Jack to the American wide, like, mainstream audience in 92. And, like, they had a series of matches, and then I think it was Bash the Beach 92 where they had their match that's just fucking nuts. And, like, yeah, we were making fun of the, like, hardcore legend Sting, and he had matches with Cactus Jack, and they were more intense. They're very akin to Mankind versus Shawn Michaels at In Your House, like, 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just one of those where it's just like, no, Sting and Foley had just really good chemistry, which is something you could say with a lot of, like, Sting. It's a shame that, like, that Crow character had to deal with the Starrcade where Bret Hart had to show up and all that bullshit. Like, Sting did get a raw deal a lot of the time in his career.
Yeah, and the not fast, fast count and all of that we've covered before on various shows or
sorry, networks. someone just peeled out the road behind me. And I heard a sound through my headphones, and I got real scared for a second. Sorry. That's what that look was. But yeah, no, that's like whenever you said your Sting moment, I was like, honestly, I love going back. And I'll watch it a couple times a year. But Cactus Jack and Sting in early WCW, I love that shit. His NWA stuff with Flair was fucking great.
I mean, his entire feud with Flair. Like, that is a Batman Joker level.
Literally the last WCW match. Proper WCW match.
Wasn't it the first match on Nitro 2? Like,
nope, that was Jushin and Thunder Liger and Pillman.
What was the main event of the first Nitro?
I don't know.
Was it Sting? Because I thought that was like a bookend of they were the main event of the first show and the main event of the last show. You talk about like his rivalries and like, yeah, Ric Flair. Which, granted, yeah, we know who he turned out to be, so that kind of sucks. But the constant just like the meme, and I joked about it of
it was Sting and Ric Flair. They weren't the main event.
Okay.
It was for the WCW United States Heavyweight Championship.
Okay, and so they wrestled on the first Nitro. I knew there was some kind of bookend story there. Yeah. But yeah, that Sting Ric Flair rivalry, and then like every time that Flair would convince Sting to come to his aid, only to immediately turn on him.
Yeah,
like it was always funny. He had a very good match with Vader.
I
remember watching that later. Like,
I watched his whole career later.
Probably like in college. I couldn't tell you what show it was from, but I remember there was like a really good Vader match that he had that I really liked. But we're going to wrap it up there unless you have anything else Sting specific. Because there's one thing that I want to end on.
Yeah, go ahead. You're good. We can wrap it up.
Well, I just want to make sure you didn't have anything else that you wanted to say. Like, I'm not trying to cut you off.
No. Go back and watch Sting matches, guys.
Yeah. From pretty much any era, too. Like,
yeah,
he had a really great match with AJ Styles in TNA.
He was the one guy. He was the one guy in TNA that very much was like a legacy hire that didn't phone it in.
Yeah. Well, he was also kind of a cornerstone of that company. Like, he was brought in to like gain for it to get credibility. It was before it became, you know, the WWE castoffs who showed up for a payday. Like, it was. No, he was there to like he had his working boots on.
Yeah.
When he showed up in TNA and kept that energy the entire run through. Was there some really dog shit stuff that he was involved in? Yes, Hogan. like, there was some
sure
really,
was.
He did some really good stuff in TNA too. My favorite Sting moment, though, is probably my favorite trope in all of professional wrestling. And if you've known me for any amount of time, you know what I'm about to talk about. And that is Sting disguising himself as Sting. And it doesn't happen a ton.
It's happened way more than it should have, though.
No, it hasn't, because it should have happened literally every week. But it didn't. And it was, you know, Sting disguising himself as the imposter Sting in WCW, only to lay out Bagwell. Like, yeah. I remember that moment. I know it was Buff Bagwell that he hit with the Scorpion Death Drop, as they were like, yeah, we got it. Like, nope. Had the wig, the wig comes off, he drops him, takes off the mask, only to have the exact same face paint underneath.
God damn, it's so good. It's so stupid.
The Rob Van Dam one, where he's in the crowd, and the more you watch that video, the better it gets, because it's like, it's RVD high-fiving fans, except he's not, because he's just like, no one's making contact, and then someone just doesn't even have their arms out, so he's just like, he stops, he's like, alright, cool, yeah, man. And then he gets to the fan in the Sting mask, who blasts him with a chair, takes off the Sting mask, and it's Sting. And then it happened a few times in AEW too. Like, it's my favorite shit. It makes me laugh every time. It's super effective. Like, it always works. It has never backfired on him doing it.
Yeah.
Just like,
well, it's the element of surprise.
Well, and like the Bucks, even like it was last week. Them going after the Sting fans, because they're like, no, I know you're under there. And then, nope, he did the rafter entrance one last time. Like, ah, it's so cool. I fucking love it. What a career he's had. What a performer. One of the all-time greats, like, most iconic performers of this in any generation. And congratulations to Sting. Well-deserved. Yeah. Now stop throwing yourself off of shit and just, like, come say hi every once in a while. Cause like, I would not be sad if he shows up on AEW again. Just, you know, don't wrestle.
Yeah, no, you're good. You did what you needed to do. Final match.
So that's gonna do it for the show. Thank you to everybody for being here. I'm gonna get with Dalton about giving him some dedicated time to talk about the figures that he's found and gotten the last couple weeks, as well as our 2K24 review in progress / early thoughts / review. But we will get that out as soon as we can. See what we can do. But if you like this, if you like us, you can follow us on social medias. The show is at Nerdiest Part on Instagram and Threads and Twitter. Dalton is Mr. D Anthony NPOTR on Twitter. I am the 5-star man on everything, with the number 5 the five star band with the number five. And yeah, we appreciate you hanging out. What was your favorite Sting match? Do you have a favorite Sting memory? Do you have a second favorite Sting memory? Because I assume your favorite Sting memory is him taking his mask off only to have the face paint on underneath. So we'll be back next week, though. Thank you all so very much for hanging out with us. We appreciate you. But until next time, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And as always, watch more wrestling.